Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This South Cars server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima. And all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com. And for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control actually for this session is Roger, W4RFJ, up there in Ridley Park, Pennsylvania, I believe. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm just merely opening it up. I'm located in the city of Port St. Lucie down in South Florida. So we currently have a temperature of 82 degrees and a beautiful, beautiful day. And the backup today will be KY6V from my same location. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, please come aboard. Hearing no emergency traffic, that's always a great thing. Do we have anyone celebrating their birthday either last week, maybe tonight, or the upcoming week that would like to come aboard so we could say happy, happy birthday? All right, I'll say my usual comment. That means we're not getting any older. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, welcome to the TIN Open Forum. This is our monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. And our program this evening is on automatic and positive train controls, I believe. And like I said, our net control is Roger, W4RFJ. So if that's okay with you, Roger, I'm going to turn it over to you. I'll be in the background working on my usual, but I will be listening. So, Roger, are you ready to begin? And hopefully you'll have a lot of fun tonight.
Okay, K6SUN, this is W4RFJ. I am more than ready, Miss Sunshine. Are you ready?
Yes, Roger, I am ready. So the helm is now yours, and like I said, hopefully you'll have a lot of participation and a lot of fun tonight. So I'll turn it over to you, Roger, and like I said, just have some fun. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November over to W4RFJ.
K6SUN, this is W4RFJ. Thank you, Miss Kathy, for that awesome introduction and the preamble. It's greatly appreciated. This is W4RFJ, and I am going to take some check-ins as we go through the presentation tonight. I don't know if everybody's on board with the attachment, the file that I have available. It was up on the voip.southcars.com website. But anyway, we'll just proceed. I'd like to start off with a statement that we can talk about for a couple of minutes. We have a couple of forms of controlling the trains as they are in the this modern day train sets that we have roaming all over the country. The oldest is ATC, which stands for Automatic Train Control, and then we have what we call ACCESS, which stands for Automatic Civil Speed Enforcement System. Both of those separate systems combined provide you with what we call positive train control. And everybody asks, what does it do? What is it for? Well, let me tell you something. The first and foremost thing that any of these systems are doing is stopping the train. When it detects an issue, and we'll talk about that more, each system operates separately, but that's their primary mission, is to stop the train. So with that, I'm going to take check-ins and see if we can get a roster here and maybe get some questions about what we've started discussing. And first of all, I'd like to welcome everybody to tonight's TIN. I believe this is my first, and I'm hoping everybody enjoys it. So if everybody that would like to join in would give me their suffix only, please. I will set up a round of conversation. This is W4RFJ. Over.
6, Victor. Locked and loaded.
And Victor, X-ray Papa.
Okay, I have 6, Victor, and Victor, X-ray Papa. Are there any others? Please call W4RFJ. Suffix only, please.
HA, please.
Okay, I have Hotel Alpha. This is W4RFJ with the Thursday night TIN. Any further check-ins, please call W4RFJ. Suffix only, please. Okay, I guess that's it. We got 3 at the top of the hour here. 6, Victor, please fill your call and welcome to the South Cars Thursday information at. Please, do you have a question or any comment concerning what I just said? Please, welcome for everything.
Okay. I don't know if it was on my end or yours, but you were breaking up a little bit at the tail end, Raj. KY6V here. Thank you, Senor, for taking over the podium this evening, and I appreciate all the work everybody does that you put into getting this thing ready. Ladies and gentlemen, he's got a PowerPoint that he worked up pertinent to this evening's program that you can take a look at your leisure. The directions on how to find it and where to go are on our website within the promo at the center of the home page for tonight's TIN program. I'll have a lot of questions as you go along. Other than stopping the train, I'd be interested in knowing what access really supplies over and above the original auto train control. And I've been doing a little bit of reading on it, but I think you could probably explain a lot better than what I have taken in so far, you know, such as not only stopping the train, but other safety functions, scheduling functions, et cetera, et cetera. Back to you, sir, from KY6V. Thanks, Raj. Well, looking up at the marquee here, it seems like maybe that breakup was on his end and he went bye-bye. He's back. Okay. Raj, I don't know how much of my transmission you got. KY6V, back to net.
All right, I think
that looks like he's got blown off again. Let's go ahead with the stations that have checked in and give Roger a chance to find a cork for the leak in the dam. N1 and VXP. Hi, Rick. How's everything in your neck of the woods? Over.
Good evening, all. N1 VXP. Kind of wet, rainy, rained all day, so didn't really do much. It finally stopped raining enough, got outside, and I said, well, I'm going to sit out here, and even though everything is wet, it's still not bad. Still a little bit on warm side, and waiting around for somebody to deliver a little food item. So otherwise, just enjoying it. I just wanted to let everybody know that I've got, I'll put it this way, my grandfather was an executive with the Chicago and Northwestern Railroad. And Esau, I had a good interest in the railroad when I was young. So, let me drop for a second. Just a coughing fit when I don't want it. He saw that I had interest in the railroad and said, hey, I can give you a little bit of information. He was able to get my brother and I a tour of a rail yard, and he gave us a lot of stuff to read, and I found it very interesting how the trains work, how they control, how the braking system is so crucial on the system. And living in an area where we had two major railroads, rail lines, not very far, I had the opportunity watching trains going by and seeing a couple of minor little problems with some of the trains that came through, and learned a lot. Let me drop for a second. And one thing I did notice was that our school system, every year, always end up putting up a program to inform and educate the kids on trains and the dangers of running across the tracks when you don't want to do it, or when you shouldn't do it. So I learned at an early age, a lot of things, and thought it quite interesting. So definitely looking forward to the program tonight. NYCXP, back to Net Control.
Okay, thank you, Rick. Let me see if I've got it here. All right, Roger's plugged back into the scene, so Roger, I'm going to send it to you just shortly. Very interesting background, Rick, in preparation for tonight's net and the fact that I was backup. I thought maybe I ought to look into it a little bit. So I've been doing a little reading on the subject that we're discussing this evening, and I was just absolutely amazed at all of the things that go on behind the scene. You know, you just don't get on the train, ride, and get off the train. I mean, these guys are doing an awful lot of things, an awful lot of communication, both automatically and manually, and so on and so forth. All right, we've picked up Rick on your list. Roger, H.A. would be next when you're ready. W4RFJ from KY6V.
Okay, Gordon, I hope we can do a quick audio check here. When you said I dropped out, I looked up and saw that I was still on the phone network, and I don't understand why it gave me such a fit switching over to Wi-Fi, but anyway, I guess I'm back, and I did not get anything you said, so if you don't mind, Fred, standing by just for a minute, I'd like to get Gordon to repeat what he said so that we can proceed with the program, and thanks, Rick, for coming in and joining us. W4RJ, back to KY6V.
Okay. Well, you're looking good and sounding good at the moment, so let's hope it just stays in place. I was just saying thank you, first of all, for all your efforts in pulling this program together. And I know that you're a pretty busy guy. And putting the PowerPoint together and everything, I know, was time-consuming. And I said I'll probably have a lot of questions as you go through things here this evening, but my first question would be, what does the access package give us extra from the original ATC package? Probably, beyond just the braking system, safety system. And I suspect it includes scheduling and that kind of stuff. That was my question for the moment. KY6V, go ahead, Roger.
Okay, well, you got to understand the scheduling and stuff like that really has nothing to do with it. The access The automatic civil speed enforcement system is a system that gives more information to the train so that people on the train and people working on the main can be safe. And we'll get more into that as we move into access. But I think if you don't mind me deferring the answer for that, what does it give you extra? Well, it gives you more definite, you're not working with blocks, you're working with locations within that line. So, but what you did say about things that are going on in the background, yeah, there's a lot going on in the background. You know, this equipment gets inspected nightly. I mean, every day. They're mechanically and electrically tested and ensured that they are safe. And this is all part of it. We do go through and check the automatic train controls. We do check the access. And both of those together is what gives us positive train control. So if you hear anybody talking about PTC, they're talking about the combination of two separate systems, that's ATC and Access. So, Gordon, very good question. We'll be talking more about that. Let me pass it over to Fred. K2HA, I apologize for my dropping out, but I hope I'm in there now. Fred, pick it up. Take her away. Welcome aboard the South Cars Thursday Information Net. This is W4RFJ. We're talking about train controls. Go ahead.
Very good, Roger. Thank you very much for recognizing me, and this is Kilo 2 Hotel Alpha, and I've been just doing a little bit of research, and a little confused by all the acronyms that are not in the United States. Like over in Europe, I've seen three, ICS and SCADA, S-C-A-D-A, CBAS, S-I-B-A-S, and the European Train Control System. In China, they apparently have copied the European Train Control System, and they use the Chinese Train Control System. And so, toward the end of your presentation, or at the end, I would appreciate you discussing security, because the articles I've read over on the European train control system is they talk about all kinds of vulnerabilities, how people could hack in, get into the different controllers, like the WinAC RTX controller, because a lot of these are PC-based, and the they can stop the train, they could write programs to reroute the train. All kinds of interesting things in the article I read. And I'm just wondering, is the system that you describe also PC-based or computer-based and has similar vulnerabilities? Okay, that's my question. This is Fred, K2HA.
Okay. Well, I'll be honest with you, Fred. I'm not at liberty to discuss security issues, especially in an open forum like this. So I probably won't be getting into that too much. I guess the whole design, the objective of this this discussion, this get-together here, is to talk about the systems that are in place, and you got to understand this is all new stuff. The ATC is old. That's been around since Noah was a mess cook. Well, actually, I'd say the early 1900s. If I move into the next slide, electricity comes to the rescue. This basically gives a diagram that shows, or a picture that shows, how they used batteries to across the rail that would energize a relay, and when a train went into that block, that isolated block, it would shunt those batteries, therefore causing the relay to drop out. So what did that do? Well, that controlled the lighting on the wayside. The lighting would either be a red light or a green light. So as you're approaching the block, and it's all by block control, it basically keeps trains that are behind you away from you, if that makes any sense. Now, ATC, this isn't ATC that I'm talking about. This is just block controlled. I hope everybody understands that. And with that, I'm going to take some more check-ins and see if we can get some discussion going about the block control that I'm showing in the presentation here. And I hope everybody's had access to it. You can see in the diagram, it's a little, the letters are a little bit small, but I was more concerned with you seeing the track, the batteries providing voltage to that track, and how it energizes the relays in order to give a green light, so to speak. The foreground shows the green light energized. The background there, you can see where the train is over those rails, and you can see that it's got a red light behind it. I guess the train is moving toward us. So anyway, let's take some more check-ins, get some more people involved here, and we'll go for that. Fred, we can talk more about security in another venue if you don't mind. Just trying to keep this simple so that everybody understands what kind of safety items are in place when you're riding our trains. Over.
Okay, very good. I was just thinking that if at the end you had some comments, that would be fine. I'm just wondering if the different control systems, since they all seem to be made by Siemens, are just very similar to each other or quite different. Okay, this is Fred, K2HA. Thank you, Roger.
Okay, my pleasure. Let's take check-ins. We're talking about how electricity is used to control the wayside in a block operating system for train controls. This is W4RFJ. Do we have any people, or people, any licensed amateurs that would like to join the conversation? Please call W4RFJ, suffix only, please. Okay, well, that's not going to help my discussion. Gordon, do you think it's okay to just move on to the next slide if we have no people wanting to discuss it? W4RFJ.
Sure, I don't see why not, Roger. You might mention the URL, probably abbreviate for them. Give them the delcodoug.org and then the tab that they can find the stuff on. Some of them may have not had an opportunity to look at the PowerPoints. While I've got it, I'll ask you a question. I'm full of questions. I doubt if I'll run out tonight either. It's a grand subject to discuss. Explain to me how a block is designed. I'm guessing that a block is dependent on the terrain that the train will be traveling in, and whether it's congested or not congested. Therefore, a block could be longer in one respect for one land plan and shorter for something congested. And then the second question that would come along with that, you know, I put an awful lot of towers together in my lifespan. How long is a track? Now, I don't mean the total line. When they lay down a track, and then they get ready to lay down the next one and couple it together, is that track 20 feet long or 10 feet long or 100 feet long or what? KY6V, go ahead.
Okay, well, the first question you answered yourself. Yeah, it does depend upon the block length. Can be anything from 100 feet, less than 100 feet, It depends on congestion, how much activity. You know, the whole idea with that type of system is to provide some separation between the trains. You know, as the trains get closer, we're going to talk about this in a minute, but each block is designed to give the trains some separation. So, you know, if you talk about a line that's going across country, you know, the block could be several miles long. It really is dependent upon how the engineers have set it up. As far as the second question, let me grab a nickel. The second question, I mean, I have seen some sections of track, the rail by itself that's attached to a wooden, and I just lost what those wooden pieces are across the track. Anyway, sorry about that. I hate it when I lose my train of thought. I've seen them 30 and 40 feet long being put in place, the railroad tie, attached to a wooden railroad tie. But then I've seen some of the newer systems for the high-speed trains where they have the entire tie with both rails already attached to each other. The ties are made out of cement, and they bring in these big cranes, and they lower it right down and put it in place on the ballast. So, it's some pretty neat stuff. That's another subject in itself. Let me grab a nickel. Okay, for those of us joining, for those of you who are joining us after the fact, we're talking about positive train controls. And the website is www.delcodoug.org. And I spell Delta, Echo, Lima, Charlie, Oscar, Delta, Uniform, Golf. That's www.delcodoug.org/PTC/alpha/quick/intro.pptx. And actually, if you just go to delcodoug.org, select the Articles tab, and you'll see it listed right there with submitted articles right underneath the KY6V's Echolink audio article. All right, let me grab a nickel here, and we'll take some more check-ins. By the way, Fred asked a question, and I can't remember what it is, but we'll get back to that as soon as I take some more check-ins. W4RFJ. Okay, this is W4RFJ. Fred asked, do they use solar rechargeable batteries? I don't think so. Not anymore. Not at that time. Actually, they don't use batteries like that anymore. Maybe for backup. Let's take some check-ins. This is W4RFJ. The next section we're going to get into is aspects. These are displays that are displayed on the wayside, which is next to the tracks and also in the cab for the operator to know what his speed limits are. Anybody got any questions, any comments, please join us. This is W4RFJ, suffix only, please.
Victor X-Ray Papa with a question.
Okay, Rick, go ahead. I guess everybody's trying to get up to speed, and I know there's about 100,000 people out there just dying to jump in and ask questions. But go ahead, Rick, we're standing by for you, W4RFJ.
Very good, N1VXB here. Actually, it's more than one question. You mentioned about block control. I happen to live, when I was in Michigan, couple of hundred yards away from the railroad crossing. Now, you mentioned about battery-operated system for controlling the trains, but the sidings as well are battery-controlled. As far as the, at a certain distance, the on the track, it was the idea that the train would hit across and shunt out that circuit, triggering off the crossing lights and the gates. But at the same time, further down on the track, there was another control, like you had explained, with the red and green light. But it was my understanding, am I right, that that also is put in there in place, because there may be a sighting active of other trains coming in and off the track that would trigger that off as well. But see, these are things that I remember, and I'm going back, I'd say, well over 50 years. But I do remember the systems. And I happen to go into that one area, and I noticed that they didn't have the battery system for the light control. Quite surprising. I guess they went into regular AC power source. N1ZXP, back to net control.
Okay, Rick. You know, I really didn't go much into sightings. I do talk about it a little bit with access, mainly because with the old system, the issue isn't so much getting information into the train or getting information to the operator about wayside signals. I know that those remotely controlled switches also controlled wayside signaling. I don't know if that was part of block control or not. I think it might have been a separate issue. But anyway, I'm glad you brought it up. I'll have to look into that a little bit more. You got to understand, my job with the railroad is to teach the technology to the maintenance people so that they can maintain the equipment. I'm not so much into the operation side as I am into the mechanical side. So there may be some questions such as yours, Rick, that I could not verify until I've looked into it. But it sounds unique, but I don't think it's part of block control. I think it's part of remote control. So with that, let me move on into the aspects here a little bit. I want to talk about that because whether it's on the wayside or it's inside the cab, and what I mean by the wayside is it's next to the tracks. It's almost like having stop signs and speed limit signs that the engineer can understand, or gives him his maximum authorized, his maximum speed limit in whatever area that he's in. So let me grab a nickel. So Rick, I don't want to cut you off, but I want to get through this because we could be here all night, especially with Gordon loaded up with questions. Man, he's going to challenge me. I can see it coming. All righty, so we talked a little bit about block protection. We're going to talk a little bit more about block protection once we understand the speed limits or the aspects that are shown to the operator in the train. Let me grab a nickel. Now, the aspects, I'm only showing a four-aspect system, but trust me, they've got other systems in place that are using ATC. They've got the nine-aspect system, which is what everybody's going to. Makes it a little bit more complicated. So I'm just, to keep it simple, I'm going to use the four-aspect system, and that's traditionally been what most railroads use until they get into the high-speed stuff. So we have restricted, we have approach medium, and we have a clear. Okay, each aspect, the clear is three dots straight up and down, almost like in the vertical L of the clear word. And we have approach medium, which actually has two, one at an angle and one straight up and down. That's a speed limit of 45 miles an hour. Now, the clear aspect is what we call maximum authorized speed, and that deals with the physical characteristics of the track. All the engineers, all the conductors have to be on top of the ball for the physical characteristics of the line that they're running their train on. So a curve might have a maximum authorized speed of 20 miles an hour. It may have a maximum authorized speed of 90 miles an hour. It just depends on the physical characteristics. Let me grab a nickel. So the reason for these aspects is they provide us with a speed limit for that specific block, okay, whichever block you're in. So clear is maximum authorized speed, approach medium is 45 miles per hour, approach is 30 miles per hour, and restricted is 20 miles per hour, okay? So whenever you go 3 miles per hour over those speed limits, you'll get a warning and alarm, and I think 15 seconds later, if you don't apply some brake, you will get a what they call a penalty braking, and what happens is the train will stop. So, and then you got to sit there for 15, 20 seconds, depending on how the system's laid out, to reset the brakes and get moving again. So, anyway, let me see. Do we have any people questions about aspects? Let's try to limit it to that, and that way I can stay on track and we'll be able to move into the next slide. Any check-ins, suffix only, please, W4RFJ. Okay, I have nobody with questions, so we'll move. Oops, I thought I was transmitting. Sorry about that. In the managed blocks slide, I have five different scenarios here, and I want to do a little bit more description for those who do not have access to the files. By the way, again, that's www.delcodug.org. Under the Articles tab, you'll see the PTC, a quick intro PowerPoint available. Okay, let me grab a nickel. Gordon, I hope you don't mind me using you as a guide here, but am I moving too fast, or does it look like I'm going in the right track here?
No, I think everything's Joto, as they would say in the Far East. Well, maybe I got to take that back. Listening to the news today, I'm not sure it's so Joto. Go ahead, Roger, KY6-ray.
Okay, very good. Well, let's look at the, on the left-hand side, I show five blocks. And let's say we're the bottom train, and we have an aspect of clear. The block ahead of us has no train in it. And if I see a clear going into that track, I know that three more blocks ahead of me, there's a train. Okay, just because of the way the system works, I know that three blocks ahead of my train, because I have a clear aspect ahead of me, or in the cab signal, you can see the aspect showing in block zero. And basically, as we move closer, the aspects change. What is happening? It's slowing us down. So I have a clear, and as I move into the next block, it'll go to an approach medium, and then into the next block, I'll get an approach, and then I approach the block that other train is in. What do I get? I get a stop signal. Why? Because there's a train in the next block. Now, usually that is a stop and proceed at a restricted speed, so we're not going to get into that, but the point that I'm trying to make to you is that the blocks allow us to provide a buffer and slow my train down so that I can better control my train as I approach another train. So let's take some check-ins, see if anybody's got any questions. I know these diagrams may be a little confusing, but I'm hoping that this will clear up some issues with some of the different things that we do on the railroad that helps us provide more safety to our crews and to our passengers. Any check-in, suffix only, please. Questions about block management is what we're looking for. W4RFJ.
Yeah, 6-Vector with some info.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Thank you, Raj. I just received an email from George, N-O-7-O. He's apologizing that he's not checking in with you. He is, however, recording the session as a backup recording for me. He's got some things going on in the background that has got him tied up in his knickers. So that's the situation there. Will you be moving into moving blocks later? I'm a little interested in that one, too. Over.
Moving blocks. I don't think I'm prepared for that. What I was hoping to do is, right now we're at a point where we're using batteries and wayside signals to give the engineer the information or speed limit information to manage his train in a safe manner using blocks. The issue that I want to move into next is automatic train controls. I want to explain what ATC is, because instead of using battery, we inject a signal into the rail, kind of like using battery, but we use a signal. So I wanted to talk about that and explain how that signal's getting into the cab for the operator, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm all ears on this one. Is it RF on the rails, or is there a little tiny Wi-Fi antenna on the box over?
No Wi-Fi at this point, but it's moving that way. Okay, well, let's move into controlling. I've got a slide called Controlled with Electrical Pulses, and I'll give a little bit more of a description. This is W4RFJ with the Thursday Information Net, Southcar's Thursday Information Net. The next slide I show two different trains, one kind of off in the distance showing the caboose closest to us, and there's several blocks in between. You can see the wayside signals, the flags that go up and down and tell the operator what his speed limit is, and you can see how the they show these pulses in the rail. Now, it's kind of hard to explain, but that block, there's a signal that gets injected or gets applied to both those rails. Now, both those rails are an open until your train moves into it, and then your wheels, your front wheels and your axle, provide a loop. Now, the signal is at a specific level, and as you get closer to the generator, the signal gets stronger. So you have to set the signal strength at the far end. Now, you're wondering, okay, what are they putting on the rail? Well, it is a 100 hertz signal. And if you look at the signals that I show on that slide, signal one is what you can see with an O-scope across the rail. Okay? There's a lot of noise there. The signal at 2 is what gets shown after the filter inside the ATC equipment, and then 3 shows the 100 hertz pulses, and there's a little bit more involved with the pulsing, and I'll explain that in just a second. Let me make sure everybody's with me. I'll take another round of check-ins, and then we'll move on. This is W4RFJ. Anybody wanting to join the conversation or has questions, please call W4RFJ, suffix only, please.
Yeah, 6-vector with just a little extension on what you just said.
Go for it, Gordon.
Okay, is this 100 hertz an RF signal, or is it a carrier frequency that is modulated at 100 hertz? Over.
No, to answer your question, it is a 100 hertz carrier that is pulsed on and off at a specific rate. Over.
Oh, okay. Very good. And does that signal pretty much go up and down the whole block, or is it triggered as the train gets close to it?
Okay, well, let me see if I can approach that in a slightly different way. If you have a generator providing the pulsing 100 hertz carrier at one end of the block, right, and there's no train on it, you don't have a closed circuit, so you don't have any current flow, right?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, well, picture this. That's how the guys down at the downtown on their big maps know whether or not there's a train in that block, because as the train goes into that block, the wheels short and create a big, huge loop, which allows current to flow, which allows the carrier, pulsed carrier, to travel up and back on the tracks. Are you with me there?
Yeah. And how far will it travel before it peters out?
Well, depending upon the length of the block, you have to set your level at the generating end so that you have enough signal at the far end that isn't an issue. The whole point of the matter is when that engine pulls out on top of that block, there are track receivers. Now, you got to kind of picture this in your mind. That big loop becomes the primary of a transformer. Okay, there are magnetic pickups. There's two pickups that ride right over the top of the rail that actually pick the signal up like antennas over the top of the rail. Okay, so that has to be alternating. Being as it's 100 hertz, it is alternating, so it's able to, through a transformer type of action, get pumped up into the system to be filtered. Does that make sense?
Okay. Well, then my next question is, how does the dispatcher many miles away get this information?
Well, the dispatcher doesn't get it. It's the operator in the train that gets that decoded pulse rate to tell him what his speed limit is in that block. So he doesn't have to rely on the wayside anymore. He gets it right in his cab.
Okay. Okay, well, I was reading something about the ability to have the dispatchers know where the train is actually located. Their GPS is whatever. I know that they're using two-way communication and then digital as well. Let me ask you this question. Is the RF transmitter and receiver aboard the train sufficient to get to the dispatchers? What do you have, a bunch of relay stations, or how does that work?
Okay, we're getting way ahead of ourselves here, Gordon. We're not there yet. We're still in the automatic train control. Okay, this is the four-aspect system that I'm talking about. And basically, this is a way for the control center to tell that block what speed limit he needs the train to go. There's no feedback in this system at all. The only feedback that you get is the operator's response to that speed limit, okay? The way that the control center knows there's a train in that block is by the fact that there's current flowing in that specific block. They know that there's a train there or somebody shorted the two tracks together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the only place I'm hanging here is... how does the headquarters, I'll call them headquarters, how do they know that there's current on that particular portion of the track? Over.
Well, that's built into the generator. That's the wayside electronics that's controlling, that's not controlling, but how do I explain it? I'm trying to keep things in simple terms here. I guess what we need to do, because what you're talking about is access, okay? There's a lot of feedback coming back from access, and when we get into that, those questions will get answered. I guess what I need you guys to look at is the set of tracks that are just below the train tracks that show a wheel and an axle and the pickup coils sitting over the rail. That's how that signal gets into the train, and then the electronics within the train decodes the pulse rate. Now, it is the pulse rate at 100 hertz that determines the speed limit. And I don't know if you can see it, but there's four different aspects. I'm not even sure if this is the right slide. But anyway, the four different aspects are different pulse rates. And right off the top of my head, I can't remember what they are, but I can get that information out. Let me take a second here to let the repeaters reset, and we'll see if we got any more questions. Gordon, let's just move on from here. The point that I was trying to make is that there is a 100 hertz carrier, and it's pulsed at different rates to tell the train how fast to go. That's what gives us our aspects. Did that make sense? Over.
Yes, sir. With you 100%. Thank you.
Okay, I know I'm dragging a little bit here, and I do apologize, but is there anybody else that would like to join the conversation? Please call W4RFJ, suffix only, please. Okay, so I call it a PL, or we use on the radios for PL. There's different subaudible tones that we use to turn the squelch on the radio. Well, we use the PL at 100 hertz. So there's another frequency, 250 hertz, and it alternates with the 100 hertz at different pulse rates to give us a 9-aspect system. But I don't want to confuse things any more than I already have. The whole point of the matter is that signals are injected in the rail to provide us with block management so that the trains get slowed down as they get closer to each other. So if everybody's on the same page with that, I'm going to move on to access. Let me make sure that everybody's on board. If there's any questions before we move into automatic civil speed enforcement system, please call W4RFJ. All right, here we go. Now, access is something that it's an infrastructure thing that can be very expensive, and I got to tell you, the railroad that I work for is in the lead as far as having things ready to go in place whenever they get it, you know, authorization to turn everything on. But in this system for Access 1, which is the first version, includes transponders and a scanner antenna mounted under the train. The transponders are actually mounted to the ties, and they usually come in sets of two or more, and I'll explain a little bit more about that. Anybody have any questions or any want to join the conversation about automatic civil speed enforcement system, please call W4RFJ and suffix only, please. Okay, nothing heard. Well, here we go. Let's start with the transponders. Now, the transponders and the scanner, I don't know if you guys are familiar with RFID, but this is where the technology comes into play a little bit more in depth. And actually, every one of those transponders has a little computer in it. And what happens is the scanner antenna transmits on one frequency, and what that does is provide power and wakes up the processor in the transponder, and then the transponder will send that data back, the data that it has stored in it about the physical characteristics of that track, back up into the scanner. So you get a couple of different things here that's very important. Let me grab a nickel. One, it gives the speed limit back to the train depending on the type of train that it is. If it's a cargo train, or let's say a diesel engine that just pulls cargo, then it's this speed limit. If it's a passenger train of another type, it gets another speed limit depending upon the characteristics of the track. It also has, whether it's a hill, whether it's a downward incline, how far away the next set of transponders are, and it also has the latitude and longitude for that transponder set built right into it. So what did we just do? We just gave ourselves a definable locating feature for the train. The train knows exactly where it is dependent upon the information that that transponder sends back. It's a glorified RFID system. Any questions? Anybody want to join the conversation? We're talking about positive train controls and how it relates to automatic train controls and automatic civil speed enforcement system. Please call W4RFJ, suffix only, please. Okay, hearing none, I guess I should just keep going. I was hoping to get some discussion going, but I guess we're not at that level yet, but that's okay. I apologize if I'm making this too technical, or I was hoping to be able to flow through this and instigate some conversation, but basically it's a glorified RFID system. So, with that said, the transponder carries all kinds of information that the train needs to know where it is, how fast it needs to go, and it also gives it more information, which we're going to talk about in a second, when we talk about Access 2, which gives us an RF link back to the control center. So, and I have to apologize. I just noticed Wayside provides. I put Wattside provides. So it was pretty late at night when I got this done. So one grammatical error, I think we should be able to get away with. Gordon, this is where your information goes back and forth, okay? But I don't think that the train is actually talking to the control center through this. It's just getting information and sending information back, depending, so that everything gets displayed on a big board. KY6V, W4RFJ, do you have any questions up to this point?
No, I guess the only question I would have at this point is, how is that information getting back to control? is it a radio path, telephone lines, or something? Over.
Okay, very good question. Well, let's see here. If you look at the Access 2 includes RF slide, you can see that the radio transmits once it's received the correct frequency from the transponder. So now we know that when we go into a block and we pick up all this information from the transponder, the radio frequency for that line, for that control or that wayside system, is actually told to the computer, and the computer goes out and asks for information. So, and this is all done digitally between the servers that are down that are in the control center and the train. So initially, it's done by RF, and different lines use different frequencies. I'm not going to get into that, but that RF signal, which is digital, gets received by the wayside system. The computer there will send that information along networks. It can be regular Ethernet, it can be fiber, whatever path of digital data gets back to the servers downtown. And the servers, there's two bits of advice or information that the train gets. One of them bits of information is what we call a TSR. That's a temporary speed restriction. So as you go into that line that's handled by that wayside, you transmit to the wayside. The wayside sends back any temporary speed restrictions. Let's say 10 miles up the line, somebody's working on the track. Well, you'll get a temporary speed restriction. And what's really neat about positive train controls is the positive train control will actually put that operator on a braking curve to slow him down before that area. Now, it's not just blocks, it's areas that are defined by the transponders. Does that make sense?
Well, it did to me. You know, in my reading also, and I know you don't want to get into it, so, just acknowledge my comment. A lot of this communication is going on at 220 megahertz. Well, you know, we got a ham band there on 220. We've already lost part of it to UPS. Are we going to lose it, the rest of it, to the train departments? Over.
No, it's those frequencies that UPS have not been using that the, it's a long story, but there's an organization that is buying up all the available 220 frequencies, and they're running into roadblocks because there's not enough frequencies available for them to put this system into full effect. Now, I know for a fact from some of the reading I've done that CSX in some of their systems use 800 megahertz. Or 8 or 9, somewhere in between there. But 220 has been what everybody's trying to use, and there's a lot of negotiating, there's a lot of politicking going on with that. So heaven only knows, Gordon. But right now the 220, which I wasn't really going to talk about, is what is being used, and There's another bit of information that I think is really important, and it's kind of unique to this system. Before, with just an ATC system, the only type of indication that you had about interlockings was the wayside. Is it okay to move into that, Gordon? And anybody else that wants to join, please, suffix only.
Well, certainly. You're steering the ship, Tiger, over.
Yeah, I know. I got goosebumps. It gets scary with me at the helm, you know. I'm trying to avoid the icebergs, but it's getting difficult. Anyway, interlocking is basically the switches that allow trains to move on to different tracks. Well, this system will basically get interlocking status messages from the actual interlocking. There's computers in that interlocking equipment that keep track of relays and all kinds of information about that interlocking. And if the interlocking is in a position that's not conducive for that train to make it through, it'll initiate what we call a positive train stop. That positive train stop, the operator does not have a choice. It makes him stop, whether he likes it or not. He just has no way of getting around it until he gets a clear or he gets the conductor to override. He has to stop the train. So that's another positive safety feature. So here we have it. We've got ATC working with the signal in the rail. That's a separate system. We have Access working with the transponders, Access 1. And in our specific system, they have Access 2, which is the radio communicating with the wayside to get speed restrictions and interlocking status messages. Now, the speed restrictions are really neat because they can actually slow those trains down and have them operating at a restricted speed. The restricted speed, if you remember by the aspects, is 20 miles per hour. But they can take it down even more than that. The Access can take them down to 5 miles an hour. It's just phenomenal how that system works. Whereas ATC just has the 9 aspects, I think the most restricting speed they have is 20. So it gives the system a little bit more feedback to keep the operator's feet to the fire. He has to follow what that system is saying. Okay, so we've talked about ATC, which is a signal in the rail. We've talked about Access 1 and Access 2. What I got to try to convey to everybody is that positive train control is the combination of ATC and Access. In the next slide, I talk about both systems operating independently, but if you look at the slide, the messages are then processed by an onboard computer from both systems that selects the most restrictive speed from the four possible. Okay, I timed out. Did everybody get what I was saying, the four sources that provide speed restrictions?
Yeah, it only caught you right at the tail end.
Okay, so thanks, Gordon. I appreciate you following up behind me here. So the four sources, one of them is ATC. Remember I said that signal in the rail is a separate system. We have the transponder, which is giving route-related speed restrictions. That deals with the physical characteristics of the track. And we have the wayside unit that provides interlocking speed restrictions. If you remember the wayside equipment unit that I didn't mention that specifically, but we did talk about the wayside talking to the switch equipment and the interlocking equipment, and that's the third source. And then the fourth source is the TSR. So if, let's say, ATC has a speed limit of 40 miles per hour, the transponder route-related speed restriction is 20 miles per hour, the wayside equipment says 25 miles per hour, and the TSR says 45 miles an hour, which one do you think is going to be the most restricting signal? Well, it's going to be the transponder route-related speed restriction because it says 20 miles per hour. So one rule that you can always rely upon is The most restricting speed is the law. Now, if he gets something outside that visually tells him to stop, there's another form of control, but that's not part of our presentation. So that's what I have. If anybody wants to discuss it some more, I'm game. Gordon, I'm going to pass it to you and make sure I'm not skipping anything or anybody. W4RFJ.
Yeah, okay. Sorry for the delay. You caught me coming back from down the hall. Very good, Roger. Would you like to touch on, I don't know how much you've got into this, but I understand that there is some problems or congestion when a train system, a train company, is running on another company's lines, which is done all the time, that they're running into some problems on compatibility. You know, one 220 megahertz frequency on one side and another on another, I guess, and that kind of thing. Any comments on that? Over.
Well, you know, that's... Sorry about that. I accidentally cut myself off. There is a lot of technical issues that are being resolved. You got to understand that, one, this is a whole new system. Two, you know, when the railroad I work for is on another system's, another railroad system, you know, we have to be compatible. And for the most part, everything is. There's just some intricacies about the system, like when, you know, they got what they call homing signals, so that when you get in and you go over a certain set of transponders, you get specific types of information, and depending upon the type of equipment you're on, one line or one railroad might have this speed limit, and our railroad might have another speed limit. That's the only area that you're going to really have any compatibility issues. And, you know, dealing with physical characteristics, I know, just for an example, our diesels are limited to 10 miles per hour. It should be 30 miles per hour, but the engineers said 10 miles per hour, and there's some areas where they can't get up enough speed to get up the track. They end up slipping, and that slipping causes a positive train stop, so they dump right in the middle of a hill. So, you know, it's not going to hurt anybody. It's just, you know, technical issues that they have to resolve. And they are working on it. So, you know, it's a new system. They got to work the bugs out. Over.
Okay. Thoroughly understand. How does this apparatus detect that the train is slipping? Can they tell that the wheels are going backwards? Or I guess they're slipping and the wheels are probably not turning, huh? How do they do that?
Well, there's this thing called speed sensors. The speed sensors are hooked up to the train controls into the access and the ATC system. That's how the ATC and the access is able to keep track of the speed of the train. Well, if you have one axle going one speed and another axle going another speed, well, guess what? Something's slipping.
I got you covered. All right. Thank you, Roger. See if there's any other questions out there.
Okay. Well, I apologize if I didn't have any more technical information, but, you know, most of the technology is... Wait a minute. Did I time it? Okay. That's George messing with me. He's got a question, so we'll get to questions. This is W4RFJ with the South Cars Thursday Information Net. Recognize N070. I'm not sure how he's going to get the question in there, but we'll ask for check-ins, and then we'll put N070 at the top of the list. Anybody in there wants to come in and join, please call W4RFJ. Add to the conversation. Suffix only, please.
7 Ocean.
We got you, George. Next. Okay. George, pick it up. We got that coffee delivery. I'm thankful.
Thanks, Chief. Although I have to admit, with the schedule I've kept in the last 24 hours, I may have skimmed some of it. Oh boy, coffee's been definitely needed. Well, here I'm here. Better late than never, I hope, Chief. I've been looking forward to this tie-in for ever since I heard about it. My question, please, Chief, is about the software updates for the onboard computer for the train operator. Are there updates required for the onboard computer? And if so, how is the onboard computer updated? Do they have to take the train back to the barn, or are they able to send out and apply the updates via one of the signal delivery routes that you mentioned, rail, RF, satellite, whatever it might be, and how do they verify the satisfactory completion of the update? So back to you, Chief, W4RFJ, NO70. Over.
Okay, George, that is a very good question. Let me just put it this way. We have other ways of connecting to the system on each train, and they do it remotely, and that's all I can say, if you know what I mean. It all deals with security, and yes, they do it remotely, and it's pretty decent. It saves us a lot of time because, you know, if we had to go aboard, well, let's see, we have... Oh gosh, 300 and some odd trains in our inventory, and if we had to go to every single train every night and update them, we wouldn't have time to maintain them. So, yeah, that's all done remotely, and can't discuss how. Okay.
Totally understood. Thank you for that info. And a follow-up question, please, sir. Over.
Hey, you know, I've been begging for people to join the conversation. Go ahead and shoot.
Okay, thank you, Chief. Well, recently, although this is not in the geographic area where you work, the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, the Washington, D.C. subway system, has certainly been having its problems and its difficulties that have resulted in extensive federal highway or NTSB oversight, congressional oversight, Homeland Security oversight. Oh my goodness gracious! One of the biggest findings has been for WMATA, pronounced WMATA. One of the biggest findings for WMATA has been a lack of adequate safety protocols or controls or deferred maintenance or poor maintenance decisions. Earlier, I heard you mention that with the train control that inspections are done each evening. I seem to recall from the newspaper articles that I read about WMATA's troubles that that may have been one of their adverse findings, where they were not keeping up to schedule with some of their inspections that then had a direct effect on train control. So, do you have a feeling for SEPTA, for New Jersey, and possibly for WMATA? Is it consistent that there would be a daily evening inspection for the positive for the train control? And, of course, if you're not able to answer this, I totally understand. W4RFJ, NO70, back to you, Chief.
Okay, George, that's a very good question, and you know, I can only say that, you know, all these different systems that are being incorporated, you know, you hear the NTSB saying, hey, if positive train control was installed, this wouldn't have happened, that wouldn't happen, and I think, you know, from the standpoint of the company that I work for, I know from personal experience that the company is very much interested in safety, not just for their employees, but for the public. So, you know, there's nothing stating that that the railroads can't go above and beyond what FRA's requirements are. And you got to understand, I don't work for a subway. I work for a regional railroad, and we have to follow what I consider much more stringent rules, much more defined safety protocols that kind of make it next to impossible to make a mistake. But, you know, on the other hand, George, anything man-made, you know, man makes mistakes. So, you know, we just got to try to stay on top of them. And we do, you know, and I'll tell you what, with what I know today, I'd ride the train before I would drive. But because I have to be places that the railroad can't get me to when I want to be there, I have to drive. So anyway, George, did I answer your question? This is W4RFJ.
Yes, sir, you sure did. Thank you, Chief. And I missed the answer to Fred K2HA's question in the text box. I was pulled away. I'm terribly sorry, but there's an annual commitment that I have this time of year that is just pulls me away. Fred asked about if rechargeable batteries are recharged with solar power. If you covered that earlier, I missed that. Could you update me on Fred's question, please, Chief? So before RFJ and 070, over.
Okay, well, I'll be honest with you. I haven't seen any solar panels, and I don't think they're using battery like they did back in the day. Those battery systems were basically put in place and maintained to be able to implement block control. So, yeah, I don't think they had the technology back then to use solar power. So I just used that specific illustration to show how a battery is put across a block and how the block gets shunted and the relays, you know, disengage and all that kind of stuff. So let's see. Back over to you, George. Any more questions? Over.
W4FJ and the TIN South Cars Net in a 70. I believe that covers my questions for tonight. I really appreciate it, Chief. Thank you again so much, and Gordon as well, too. Boy, are these TINs well worth the South Cars resource? Okay, thanks again, W4FJ. Over to you. This is my question. I'll make this my last transmission for the evening. Thanks again, W4FJ and 070. Over.
Well, thank you for joining us, George. It's always nice to hear your melodious voice, and congratulations on your placement within the South Cars family. Congratulations on that. So, all right, let's open up to everybody here. Anybody have any questions, any conversation that you want to continue with? You know, like I said, the primary job of PTC, which is the combination of automatic train control and automatic civil speed enforcement system, to stop the train. That's its job. If something shows up awry, if the operator doesn't respond quickly enough, if, you know, there's all kinds of different things that will stop the train, but that's what the PTC does. It stops the train dependent upon those conditions. So let's open it up. Suffix only, please. Jump on in. Say hello, W4RFJ.
Okay, this is HA.
Okay, Fred, I'm not talking about security, but go ahead.
Understood. In doing my research, it looked like Siemens controllers, and you go on their website, and either in Europe or here, they have a number of different controllers and boxes. But it seems like in Europe and in here, that seems to be the dominant company. Is that what you perceive?
Well, it seems to be now. I know PHW was involved, but I think Siemens bought them up. So right now, that's the equipment that is basically approved by the FRA. So I can't really answer that other than what my experience is. And you know, I'm working with Siemens. Also, we have other equipments that are not Siemens, such as our event recorders. You know, the big orange box that they have on airplanes, well, we got them on trains too. So, you know, that's where we get a lot of information. And also the PTC gives us a lot of information too about the operation of the equipment. So, but it is Siemens. I think to answer your question, that's the only company that I've had contact with. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I noticed that Siemens even makes the wheel assemblies for trains. They seem to be into everything. Okay, thank you very much, Roger. You did a great job. This is Fred, K2HA.
No, thank you, Fred. Actually, I don't I don't think I have, but, you know, hey, nobody's asking questions, so I must have put the information out right. And I guess that's really about all I have. Just to summarize, Gordon, I don't know if anybody, well, let's put it out there. Does anybody else want to join in the conversation? If so, please call W4RFJ. While you're doing that, I'm going to get my summarization together.
VXP with a comment.
Go ahead, Rick. VXP to take it. Your comment, please. W4RFJ.
Very good. N1VXP here. Yeah, I guess really from my experience, now I have to go back a number of years ago. I should say more like 50 years ago. I didn't have all this kind of great technology. Basically, making a long story short, you had the dispatchers that actually did work train orders written out at certain points, usually at a, my mind goes blank as far as the stop itself, but the train slows down, gets the orders. They actually have a wand that they hold out, and the operator has the train order written out. From what I understand, they still have that in some areas. Not so much all the electronics, but the old mechanical. And I always thought that was quite interesting that they still do that. They do also do their train orders by radio, but they still have that backup of having it in writing. And quite interesting. I've seen it when I was up in Connecticut on the Amtrak line, that they end up doing that, and I was like, wow, they still use that. Even though they got all this great technology. And yeah, they do on some of the outlying areas do have solar power on certain parts, I guess with the battery. The original batteries used to be lead acid, and the crews had to come out and refresh the batteries every so many months. But they look like canning jars, and I saw the insides and I said, wow, they still have those. I'd love to get a hold of them because they're not really being used that much, but quite interesting that they had that technology back in the 50s, 60s, and I noticed in the 70s they started changing over to batteries as far as rechargeable. Let me draw for a second. So it was stuff that I had learned and experienced. It was quite the thing, but I can see the electronic age has really gone or it actually had to go because of all systems now being electrified as far as the trains, and can't use the old way. Got to be up with the modern stuff. N1VXP, back to net control.
Okay, Rick, fine business. I guess the one thing that I believe in, and I believe the train controls do is maintain a backward compatibility. The system that I work with, I'm not involved with the operations side, but I see train orders getting done by paper. Every single line we have goes through Center City, and there is a station where if the lights are blinking and the number of the train is on, there's some train orders waiting for you. Even though we have the capability now to get that train order through a temporary speed restriction automatically through the radio now, they still have the old systems in place and still working. So there is definitely a backward compatibility, and you've got to have that in just in case of an emergency. You know, technology just makes it easier to break. So, you know, you got to be able to fall back on the old way in order to compensate for any issues that might come up with new systems. Now, the technology that we're using is not new. The technology is old, but the way they're using it is new. So, a lot of computer control. I know Fred had mentioned the personal computers. They're not PCs, but they are computerized systems. And, there's issues that you have to deal with when maintaining a computer system. And either I timed out or somebody needs to say something. So let me take a pause. W4RFJ, grabbing a nickel. Okay, got it, Fred. All right, so anyway, let me do a quick summary. We talked about block systems and how they're used to maintain some separation between the trains. We talked about aspects and speed limits that are used in that block system, and how that display gets up into the cab is through ATC and now Access. There's two separate systems that are providing speed limits. Of course, if ATC is showing 50 miles an hour or 45 miles an hour, and PTC is showing 20 miles an hour, what's the speed limit? 20 miles an hour. It's the most restricting speed is the law. So we talked about ATC, how they pulse a 100 hertz carrier, and depending on the pulse rate, tells the train what the speed limit is, or tells the train what aspect to display and what speed to hold the operator to. And then we talked about Access 1. Let me grab a nickel. Access 1 is the transponders that are put in the gauge, as they call it, on the ties. And the scanner antennas mounted underneath the train goes over that transponder and basically acts like an RFID system, but the transponder relays back all kinds of different information, and the Access 2, which is what my company uses, basically gets the system gets the radio frequency from the transponder and sends requests to the control center asking for temporary speed restrictions and interlocking status messages, and all that information's used to keep the engineer doing the correct speed. And of course, we talked about the four ways of getting that speed restriction, and of course, the most restricting speed is the law. So, unless somebody has a question, I'm going to pass it over to Gordon to tie the ribbon on it. It's been a great pleasure for me to put this together and to be able to share with my South Cars family, and I certainly do hope to get a copy of that recording so I can share it with Susan. I think Gordon had the pleasure of meeting the other day. With that, let me see if there's any questions, concerns, discussion. If not, we're going to close the net. W4RFJ, anybody want to join in? Okay, hearing none. This is W4RFJ, been your net control this evening during the TIN on train controls. Skipper, I'm going to pass it back over to you, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity. W4RFJ.
Well, I'm going to use your vernacular. No, 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 no. Thank you. KY6V here. You know, you had me smiling when you made that comment about the newer technology is just easier to break. And I immediately sat back and said it's also harder to fix. And we'll leave it at that. Question, do you still have a Dropbox account? If I'm going to get you a copy of this recording, unless you want to make it off the website, I got to get it to you some way or other, and you know, it's probably going to be 35-40 megabytes, I imagine.
No, I'll just get it off the website. We don't have to do anything extra. That's not a problem.
Okay. And while we're talking about that, George, if you're still in ear range, NO70, looks like everything stayed together on this end, so I've got several computers with the recordings on it, and there's no necessity for you to post that in the Dropbox. I just hold on to it. If I run into trouble, I'll scream and we'll take it from there. Okay, let me buy a nickel. Guys and gals, thanks very much for coming by. I've certainly enjoyed it and learned quite a bit. Took some of the confusion factor out of my thinking of what I have been reading here for the last day or two. Okay, this has been SouthCars, South Coast Amateur Radio Service, VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on the voip.southcars.com website. Your presenter tonight has been the one and only Chief W4RFJ on train control, and I have been fortunate enough to be his backup here this evening. With that, we're going to say 73s and close the session, return the server back to normal use and abuse, and we'll see you on all when it happens downstream. KY6V is now clear and the net is closed.